Anyway, first up to the other mic, could you please welcome Mr. Matthew Sweeney.
We began by taking five words and running with it. This is the Sestina where I took six words by Vladimir Nabokov from his lecture and ran and ran and ran. It's a little homage to Jim Jarmusch called Broken Flower. A cat is sitting in the tree. A man is lying on the road, clutching a broken flower. Crows circle in the sky. All the wine is in the barn. All the weather knows is rain, 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 and more rain. The cat is soaked in the tree. The wine is dry in the barn. A bus trundles down the road. Beep follows beep into the sky. The man gets up with his flower. The man chucks away his flower. Holds his face up in the rain. Extends his arms to the sky. Goes to piss against the tree. Tries to stagger to the barn. Falls down again on the road. Cheek pressed against the road. He thinks about his flower. About the wine in the barn. He struggles up in the rain. The cat jumps from the tree. A crow calls from the sky. A watery sun appears in the sky. The man wobbles down the road, stopping to lean on the tree, looking around for the flower. He doesn't notice there's no rain. He makes it to the barn. He's standing there in the barn, looking back out at the sky, wondering why there's no rain, bouncing off the road, why he can't see his flower, only that stupid tree, that tree that thrives in the rain, that road that leads to the barn, from the barn to his flower, under a grey sky. Sorry for the bloop. Naked. Take off your shoes, he said, and hurl them into the sea. Take off that satin shirt and hand it to me. And it had better fit, he said, or you're fucking dead. Take off those grey cords and hope you're my size. Take off the underpants and pull them over your eyes. And blind, take off each sock while waggling your cock, ignoring the laughs I gift you in this ghastly hour. For you that is, he said, before laughing some more and slapping me on the rump, commanding me to jump. Higher, higher, he shouted, and I heard a gun click. The sweat bubbled out of me, and I began to get sick. Stop that or I fucking shoot, you disgusting brute. He kicked me in the balls till I doubled up. Stand up straight, he roared, you contemptible pup. And he hit me on the head with a gun till I bled. More mess, he bellowed, you're worse than a pig. Then he handed me a spade and ordered me to dig.
Thanks, Matthew. Next up to the microphone, we have Mello Kay.
Okay. This one is called Trot. Fingers on my window, a calling card. I moved through some time space and counted the moments through which my memory is formed. I catch the sun in the glass of my imagination, watching it splinter and splinter, watch it state of its own testimony to the meaning of being that exists in the form of it, redefine and redefine, moving definitions like chess pieces in some game of the senses. The fingerprints of the knife gone by etched on the window. The motion of the crisp of leaves underfoot and the wrapping of coat around me. Seeking and forming. Existing through each carving on the walls of memory that defines us. Being us. And being the moments through which we formed of ourselves a testament to our dreaming. Beginning through the song out of which planet Earth was made. The song that scattered the desert sands as if rice at a wedding. That moved through each procedure, each moment. The sand filling our glasses as we watch the sun glint through the whiskey and the images of old men slipping through their stories and winding yarn upon yarn in their attempt to forget. The smell of whiskey and the sorrow upon our faces. The sun looking down, then existing with us. Catching the whiskey ice dance and spiraling over and over. Moving within itself and within its own meaning. The meaning described through each silent moment through which we break into song and swirl with the sand. Carving rocks as a testimony to history. Forming them so that the forgetting should not be forgotten. Thank you. This one is called Image 5. I wrote a lot of poems called Image for some reason. The morning stole in to greet me, its song splintering through the curtains like a dream. I moved through my own silence, the bird wing beating, the motions that existed through the dance of the rose petals that scattered through the sky. A form of elemental that existed through its own simplicity. That moved through each moment, through each petal and memory. I caught the dance in my mind and flowed through the sky of dream song beginnings, the forms of each new day and each new life. Life sparkles of its own existence and rises to the sky. It forms to the cry of a thousand histories. The World War I soldier blooded against the razor wire of somebody else's function. The general seeking red wine oblivion as others march through his cause. Examining through office paper sedation forms which he causes and yet is not part of. His face, making decisions that affect others, not himself. Playing life chess games with a comfortable detachment. The form through which history builds its wall of fame as a testament to a hurt that it itself didn't feel. The bloodied hand, clutching the razor wire because there is nothing else left. The eyes of a child silently tracking through those corridors of fame, searching for a reason that blew away on the wings of change yesterday. Each moment forming through is petal of memory. This one is called Echo 2. I stood at the bus stop, my coat wrapped around me. I counted the people moving through their lives and through the world. Each face different and each face describing its history. I painted these people in my mind, moving through the canvas of life in search of a process of flight, watching the people and the birds above them, moving in a slow-mo dance that spins through its own reasons, that molds us like we are clay in the potter's hand, each motion creating a new form, the forms interchanging through their silent evolution, becoming something, then another thing. We reach out across some river that divides us and say to take our hands. We reach over the water and become one, our hands held, fusing in one into the other and the other into one. We move through rising over the earth as our dance reaches heaven, our motions calling to sing with the birds, to become them, to become us. We move together as one, through the differences that unite us. Through the coming to be, the child on the news watches us, her silent testimony to the form through which we oscillate within one another and within her. Her face asking questions as she floats somewhere between the past and the present. We exist in a form of non-existence that advertises us with each program about washing powder, that moves to the distances, that says to be this way, as I have defined you, the washing powder ad. The sense of worth translated through the will of people we have never met. I reach out to you and you reach out to me. The child on the news echoing the form of recognition. A recognition of ourselves. To be. Moving through the sky at some dream sense moment. The child on the news. Moving silently across the screens of our awareness. The watching power to add. Defining to be. a sense through which values the things that you buy in Tesco. And this is, this one is called Motion. Drifting through the image of my soul, I existed through each moment, beginning and ending and then beginning again. I motion through the air and dance through the images that sparkle through each other like an interchange of light. They move through the directions through which we become and fail to be. They move us through each distance that creates as air flows through the directions that painted themselves against the wall of our memories. That existed as sway dance of some elements that moves through its own dream time, defining its journey through the basis of our senses. That is and is not. That establishes itself through its own reputation. That moves towards the bleary-eyed intoxication of London whiskey bars. The song of forgetting the chinks of the ice. That moves through the direction through which we learn to move. Move with a song. Move with a supernova burst that signals of our creation. That scatter through the forms of the time where we gave birth to ourselves and learned to live again. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mel. Next up to the open mic, we have Mr. Seamus Harrington.
Thanks, Paul. Two haikus. Heron on duty, gazing into reflection, image of cobra. Picky woodpecker, his staccato, his echo, rapid fire sculpture. Writer's block. I did a version of this before, it was changed. I was advised never to write about writing, so it's okay because this is writing about the difficulties of writing about writing, or writing about not writing. Writer's block. First aimed to carve a canto, to date not one short motto, an outline dot I've yet to spot, my royalties not 1 euro. This crack is overrated, this pad is mostly suited to coffee stains and paper planes than writers ill-assorted. That summer in Sorrento, I saw the great Caruso. Without his coat, he held a note and reached a great crescendo. Last month, I had my finest hour, refilled my pen with great rapport. I got the gist, a shopping list. It dawned on me at 4:30. Still draped inside the window, I hear my novel Seiko. Air freshener stink, how can I think? She's full of my own shadow. You're due an explanation, my lack of elocution. I'll sound the lexic gully trapped for just the right inflection. I often get a notion, up skills to craft inscription, compose a line and call it mine, I've yet to reach caption. Now counting on Nintendo, IQ square root of 0. Out of words and for the birds, I never like the spiral. Resorting to transcription, an Arabic concoction, the canon still a greasy till, I dread the next edition. I'm lounging on my lilo, I doodle one more limo, I never hit a spark of wit, I need a new magneto. I stop inside my dungeon, fail to write a smidgen, deep in hock against the clock, a blot on the escutcheon. Now brain dead as the dodo, you can take it as de facto. I am to blame to name and shame, excuse the innuendo. Rowing. They puff and heave, strain and tug, oar looms push before the hug. carbon fibred blades all dip to bite blue water off the slip. On return stroke, feathering nose, in deference here, all heads bow. Next stroke faster and more force, wind surfing sound, get off the course. Straight and true without a roll, well honed muscles play their role. Lungs of power beyond belief, fitness leaves no grounds for grief. Drive that yawl on this event, row on row without relent. The leader's just the canvas clear, for stroke seems lighter than last year. Straining backs and legs a quiver, forcing hard down tidal river. Searing pain and almost dead, without a wake they streak ahead. They flash in military precision, a hit disguises each incision. 2,000 meters yet to turn, the coaxing, urging cox and stern. Not one length between them yet, who round the boys without upset? Number two, with keel cut back, here's her chance to mount attack. Straightening up, the lead has changed, results may yet be rearranged. With guts on fire inside a knot, each heart yearns for that shot. No cheering masses waving banners, no veering ribs with bad manners, no long air horns to trumpet loud, no heave or push in surging crowd. That comes later on in season, when I explain you'll see the reason. It's early summer, yet none complaining, cause these ladies are just out training. On the way home last Monday night, I just put a few lines together as the sun rises. A Long Valley poet came to town. On stage, the lamp met his crown. He must have the hex, no sign of his specs. Without him, he cannot get down.
Maybe you can hear that for you. There's a bit of Jack in all of us, apparently, isn't there? Bit of Jack in all of us, right? I think we've got Peter McKeown next. Mr. Killenborough.
She entered that heartbeat
made no din. Then she lay her hand on me, and this she did say, it will not be long, Lord, till our wedding day.
Next up, we please have Jennifer Matthews.
I don't have one of my own right now, but a brief announcement. The poetry discussion book club thing that I've got going on, there's a brief hiatus until after the new year, but I've extended it on to the internet, so if you go to MySpace and look for a group called Fire and Ice Poetry, I'm going to kind of extend the book discussion group onto there. It's not a place for really posting your own poems, because there's tons of pages for that on MySpace. But if you do want to discuss the posts that we discuss here, like when we post on Fire and Ice Poetry, all one word. If you just look up Ireland, pages from Ireland, in the group section, in poetry, there's about three. Oddly, for the groups, like. And so if you don't have time to come before this night to discuss the poems, you can discuss it online. That's me.
Thanks, Jennifer. After all, that's your first time there. That was fun. Okay, we'll let you off this time.
You
next week now, right? Do I need to plug in another microphone here, or are you going to be okay with one mic? Are you going to do this together?
Yeah.
With one mic, is that okay? We welcome Mr. Wes Wallace and Ethan Eklund. This is a piece called An Introduction to the Spelling of Irish Place Names, Lesson 1. I'm glad some of you are laughing. I'm assuming that the American person is laughing. The Irish people are probably very tired of hearing Americans talk about the spelling of Irish place names. And I'm asking your indulgence because I feel that what I have to bring is a little bit more than the standard, and basically I'll just say that myself and my wife Aoife, drove to Limerick City and back to Cork about 7 times during the months of September and October, and during those drives we often saw trucks with inscriptions over the windshield and in the kind of Irish font, and the one that really I just never forget, and was beyond any other form of Irish spelling, was what appeared to me to be saying Listowel. And so I decided to write a little kind of a little series of cards, I guess you could say, to explain how to spell the word Listowel. And I hope that over the course of this, members of the audience will help me in pronouncing these words. I left my towel in Listowel. I left my soul in Listowel. I left my bowel in Listowel. I left my boo in Listowel. I left my bow in Listowel. I left my owl in Listowel. I left my toad in Listowel. I left my entity in Listentity. I left my tent in Listent. I left my tentacle in Listentacle. I left my bikini in Lestiggy. I left my wiggy wiggy in Lestiggy wiggy. I left my wiggy wiggy wig in Lestiggy wiggy wig. I left my teeth in Lestiggy. I left my bean in Listerine. I left my Tom Cream in Listerine. I left my self-control in... Are you going to charge me for that?
Okay.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Hey. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, sir. Next up, we have Mr. Aaron Lewis.
Chaotic and everything else in between can only be said about tonight. I'm going to read a poem that I wrote this morning in the creative writing class, and then I'm going to tell a story in the middle of that, and then I'm going to read something from Khalil Gibran.
Yeah,
this morning we did a creative writing exercise, and we basically we do it in here every Monday from 10:30 to 12:30 with a guy called Adam Wyatt. We do a creative writing class, and he gives us various exercises. And one of the exercises this morning, we went outside and we just observed people, and I do that every day anyway, so that fit in what I do. And then we had to write a creative monologue about it. And Adam said, "What would you do? How would you describe this person if they were a plant? How would you describe this person if they were a car? How would you say this person was? What building would this person be? What landscape would this person be?" And then we had to write about someone in the class while they were there. So I wrote about one of the girls in the class, a girl called Frances. So I'm going to title it Frances. So here we go. A temple of creative energy will rectify the unforgetting landscape of tundra and dark brown heather. Dreams wander through, crisscrossing the land as fine stitching does on a finely woven jacket. The car made a fine tearing sound. A green new Volkswagen Beetle with a red flower. A poppy of surprise takes them from this place to glasses of Shiraz and warm fires. 10:00 on a Sunday morning, let's walk with my red set of Labrador. I come home and flop into my comfy old rocking chair that Grandad made, and sip away on freshly made morning chai, which cinnamon soothes my senses and relaxes my heart. I love my life, I'm happy just as I am. I think to live a life of synchronicity all the time, it's mad. I kind of, when I first came to Cork, a lot of synchronistic events took place that helped me get started in Cork. And today, mad synchronistic things happened that kind of, the picture was finally painted tonight, so I had to share this story. In February 2005, I was lost and I was not sure what I was doing. I was in Newcastle and I was doing this and that and unsure of who I was as a person. I don't think I know who I am as a person. I think I thought I was evolving, but I was given a book by my cousin called The Celestine Prophecy, and I'd read other books similar to that. I'd read The Alchemist and I'd read another book by Deepak Chopra called Synchronicity. But at the time when my cousin gave us the book, it didn't it didn't make sense to me, and I wasn't that interested, and I just didn't want to read it. And then in January 2007, I met a friend of mine, a guy called Jason, who I actually met through my synchronistic event for last thing anyway, but anyway. I was sitting in the bodega, and I just felt this sense of loneliness and emptiness, and I wasn't sure what I was going to do. And something came to me, it said, and I wrote it down, it said, life only happens when you happen. So I left the bodega, and I felt like I wanted to go for a walk, so I ended up going into the service, which is a shop in Cork, and nothing happened from there. And then I walked around, and I met a friend of mine, a guy called Paul Crow, who's from Newcastle. And we went on a second-hand shop adventure in Cork. We went around second-hand shops, and I love to do that. And we were in Gorta, which is on North Main Street, and just the books prices were, there was a sale on the books, and all the books were €1 each, and there was a book that just seemed to jump out at me, and which that was the Celestine Properties, and it was 50 cents for the book. So I read the book, so I took the book, and later that night I was meeting up with a man called Nathan Flattery, who did the performance that you've seen tonight. I was in the drama course of Nathan Flattery. And before that, I went to see a performance. A friend of mine who were in a comedy group, was doing an improvisation comedy group. And I went to meet them and watch their performance. And at the time, I had a rain jacket on. And I had this book in the rain pocket, and it was raining, and I didn't want to damage the book, so I gave it to Aidan, and I said, Aidan, will you look after the book for me? And he put it into his bag. Then at the end of their performance, we were leaving, we were saying goodbye to each other, and I said, should I take the book home? Should I keep it? Should I take it home? What should I do? So I made the decision. I felt it was right to take the book, so I put the book in my pocket. And later on, I met Nathan Sutton, and we went for a drink, and we had a chat and everything. And then later on, we met this girlfriend who was also here tonight, and they went off to bed, and I was sitting talking to one of Nathan Sutley's girlfriend's friends, and we were talking about life and different things and everything, and she said, I'm really lunar, she says, I can't sleep when it's full moon. And I said, you seem to know about all of these kinds of things, and I said, you seem to know a lot about these kinds of things. She said that you need to know more about these things, you need to become more aware, you need to read the Celestine Properties. And I pulled it out of my pocket and showed it to her there. I was just like, fucking hell, this is amazing, like mad. So that was January 2007, I read the book, thoroughly enjoyed it, and lots of other things happened for that. After that I actually bought the book for twice in second hand shops, and I'd given it to people, and I really enjoyed the book. And last night at home, we were in the house, and I live with a couple, and they had an argument, and chairs went flying, and this happened and that happened, and it was funny. And I just said to myself, I want to read this book again, and I loaned the book to a friend of mine. So I went to my friend's and I picked it up last night, and on the way home I met Podrick on the way home last night, and Podrick here tonight. And I wanted to give the book to Podrick, but then I said to myself, I wanted to keep a copy. I wanted to earn my own copy, so I didn't give it. And then I went home, and this morning went to the creative writing class, and afterwards I went to the second hand shop on Princess Street, which is on the corner. And the first second hand shop I went to, I was looking for a coat actually, but I always looked at the books, and there was the Celestine Properties again on the bookshelf, so I bought it. After that, I went to a few other second-hand shops, etc., etc., etc. And then I went to Gorta, and the Celestine Properties is called Nine Insights. And in the bookshop, I found the 10th Insight, which is the second book of the same series. That doesn't seem that much to people, I don't think people are linked to it as much as I am, but. Also today I went to the Imperial Hotel with the guy who I met the night, Aidan. I went to the same hotel that I met him in that night. And also I met Nathan Sartre and Podrick in the same day that it all happened. So I think that was, I wanted to share that with you. That's it. Okay, I'm going to tell it now. It's mad when you share, I think when it's interesting when you share experiences like that, because only you can really know, the only person who can really know about them is yourself, because it's your experience. But anyway, the other night I was at a party, and I saw a poem on the wall, and I was fascinated by it. So here it is. Your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of light longing for itself. They come through you, but not from you. And though they are with you, yet they belong not to you. You may give them your love, but not your thought, for they have their own thoughts. You may house their bodies, but not their souls, for their souls dwell in the house of tomorrow, which you cannot visit, not even in your dreams. You may strive to be like them, but seek not to make them like you. For life goes not backwards, nor tarries with yesterday. You are the bows from which your children, as living arrows, are sent forth. The archer sees the mark upon the path of infinite, and he bends you with his might, that his arrows may go swift and far. Let your bending in the archer's hand be for gladness, for even as he loves the arrow that flies, so he loves also the bow that is safe. By Khalil Gibran, thank you.
Next up to the open mic, we have Mr. Jack Lyons.
And welcome to our American band. And the main reader tonight, which was absolutely brilliant. Thank you very much. Now, two years ago, 2005, when Cork was the so-called capital of European culture, a subject which was very, very nicely brought upon earlier this evening. Thank you for that. That was very good. I got caught up in the organisation of it in some way, and they said, Jesus, you know, we're going to start off a magazine, and you have to write something for the magazine. So, as usual, my wife wanted to know, are you getting paid for this? And of course, as usual, I wasn't. So, if anyone wants free poetry, give me a ring, because I work cheap. So anyway, we broke one night, and of course, we were organising the Grand Revolution of Wesley Culture, and on things common to that. And I got home at the early hours of the morning, and my wife was standing at the top of the stairs. And of course I got the usual, Jesus, what time is this? So, the next day I got a phone call from Frank O'Connell, who was the editor of the magazine, Wesley Culture. And he said, Jack, we have a few pieces from you, but they're very short stuff. We need one more piece. And unlike me, I got a brainwave from somewhere. And I thought, oh no, what did she say last night? And I thought, guess the time, that'll do it. So I came up with a thing called Guess the Time. So, this is it. In an age of uncertainty, of burgeoning commercialism and consumerism, and all the other isms manifold to this short piece, the author, who has to remain anonymous because his wife thinks he's at work, the author, who is evidently not at work but fooling around the city of culture with a brand new camera and no factory tape recorder, has just walked out of the Long Valley with plenty on board and heading for his next assignment. The editor has discharged him with a particular brief. Finish your pint and go forth and do a survey for the magazine, Where's Me Culture, the theme of which is, can you guess the time? Obviously without looking at sundials and other assorted time mechanisms, a pocket watch, a grandfather clock, a wristwatch and a crushed mobile, the Murphy clock in the Le Chateau, which is usually about 15 minutes past. None of these mechanisms are allowed. You must have to guess the time off the top of your head. So, armed with the aforesaid machinery, the brand camera of Japanese make, which didn't work, and the low battery street tape recorder, which worked like a dream, here's what came back. We decided to broaden the initial survey. So, with the help of funding from Wheel Creek Culture, we got a taxi to Mellow and headed for Lee Valley Lower, where Sunday Times reader DJ Fork, Andrew O'Donoghue's parents, was found asleep. I should point out that this was about 2 o'clock in the morning. Having knocked politely, the door was presently opened by Mrs. Pat McDonough. We're friends of Andrew, and we are doing a survey, Mrs. McDonough. And we want to know, without looking at any of your household time mechanisms, can you guess the time? Has this got something to do with Western culture? Mrs. McDonough, despite the terribly unsociable hour, took it all in good spirits, and having guessed that it was probably about 4 a.m., was surprised to learn that it was 7 minutes past two. From Mallow, by the same taxi, courtesy of Shawnee from Amber Cabs, we travelled to the home of Cork engineer and scholar John B. Lennon in the Lee Road. I should point out that John B. Lennon is the famous local-centric engineer who was behind the man who was behind Bernie Murphy, and who also won a historic case at the traffic lights on the Mother Farm Road, where he proved to the judge that the lights were out of sync when two drivers got the green light in sight of each other. And John D. Lennon, scholar that he is, went away and proved to all and sundry that his party had been given the wrong green light. So, John D. Lennon. The house we were looking for was called Horncliffe. After numerous turns, we eventually found it. A superb building overlooking the city. We approached the front door and respectfully heralded our unexpected arrival. The door was opened by a sleepy Mrs. Lennon, who said, "No, he's not here. Try Italy or the traffic lights on the Mother Farm Road." With a clip file on hand, we made these notes, and just as an afterthought, decided to ask a rather tired Mrs. Lennon if she could guess the time. Without looking at any of our time mechanisms, of course. "Are you the culture crowd? It must be nearly six, I'd say." Mrs. Lennon was only an hour out. It was actually 5 o'clock in the morning. There was one more stop, the Ring Brothers on Blarney Street. The rings had been recommended to us by a sandwich maker in the Long Valley, on Long Valley. The Ring Brothers have a bit of a history as far as cultural Cork goes. Charlie and John is the one with the bad leg, worked hard all their lives for Sheehan and Sullivan's, carrying bags of coal on their shoulders in all weathers. They are featured in an amazing framed photo with Humphrey Moynihan, the snug of the Long Valley, when they were much younger. The rings speak Cork like should be spoken, and they are known to have a Sunday morning pint in Le Chateau. When we got to Model Cottages on Blarney Street, where they live, the sun was about to come up. We knocked tenderly on the front door and could hear feet shuffling from inside. "Is that the guard?" A voice inquired from within. "No, it's not the guard. We're doing a survey on guessing the time without looking at any of your time mechanisms," was our reply. "And you do have the shaggy culture crowd?" We laughed at this. "Yes," was our reply. The door was open, and we saw Charlie and John dressed in their Sunday suits despite the early hour. A delicious smell of freshly cooked bodies and pig's head wafted from the kitchen. We entered the house and made ourselves comfortable on a settee under a picture of the three divine persons, Pope Pius XII, John F. Kennedy, and Mario Lanza. The cuisine was delicious and mouth-watering, so nourished were we by the unexpected treat that we absolutely forgot to ask Charlie and John if they could guess the time. It was actually 6:30 a.m. But perhaps in a further issue of Where's Me Culture, our study group will reveal how the Ring Brothers managed to get the right boils for delicious bodice and pig's head. Thank you.
Thank you, Jack. Yeah, we've got about another four people up for the open mic. If there's anyone else, just give me a shout and we can get you down here. So next up we have Patricia Walsh.
it. This is my one of my abortive attempts to look for it, but it's called a waxing wing. The sadness and staleness of the boring street, of the boring city, falls and rises as never before. Keep landlords sibling and God has a seat. There's no tractors will pull us from where we live. Now feel alive, now a bit to talk about, now watch anyone. The soul feels lost and desperate from a way to what we see. Turning and tossing the same old melodies, same old songs, to stamp out the cliche I feel we have uncovered. Sadness hasn't killed my friends. It's a safe for pleasure, I realize, as dawn opens to the next snow. If you're leaving now, young snow, the whole lot of me will understand, but not even sadness will stop you crying. Now if you turn and go your way outside, I guess it's all that's everlasting, coming from us, separate people, separate angels, falling between states. Thanks. There's another attempt of mine at love poem, it's called On the Eve of Something Else is Significant. On the eve of something else significant, there is not looked at the prescribed event in hand. Experience crosses the mind to focus elsewhere, to what cannot be predicted by the instruments of time. So, happily looking forward to exam Travis, I cannot but look at what appeared that happened at their end. In celebration not long ago, he fancied just as well and kissed the newest one in celebration. There and then, nature sin in hybrid, flowers and gay fruit, as sweetness can never be repeated. People exist apart, but surely they have souls that long not only for the home and the creator,
Thank you, Patricia. Thank you. Next up we have Mr. Alan Cody.
Okay, I came across the first poem during the week by Rumi. I like that. Because my worst habit is like a soul tired of winter. I become a torture to those I'm with. If you're not here, nothing grows. I lack clarity. My words tangle and knot up. How to cure bad water, send it back to the river. How to cure bad habits, send me back to you. When water gets caught in habitual whirlpools, dig a way out through the ocean. There is a secret medicine given to those who hurt so hard they can't hope. The hopers would feel slighted if they knew. Look as long as you can at the friend you love, no matter whether that friend is moving away from you or coming back towards you. Don't let your throat tighten with fear. Take sips of breath all day and night before death closes your mouth. And the second one is more lighthearted, and it's to women everywhere.
Hey!
Oh, you think like it's not entirely complimentary.
Hey!
Okay, next week I'll bring the complimentary report. To women everywhere, I owe you 10 poems fair. My words could not measure all you do for us. Spring, autumn, spring, summer, fall. But in winter somewhere nowhere found, a lovely lass to put my arm round. Why is it you only enjoy the day when happiness comes out of the play? We're only human, men folks say, we cannot always do it the right way. We can't, although we do our very best, we can't undo our humanness. I smile as I write these lines, for I know that sometimes too, we expect too much of you.
Thanks, Alan. Next up to the open mic, we have Mr. Scott Barrowscale.
Anyway, I wrote this poem when I was in English tutorial and I was meant to be studying poetry, but I was really bored, so but it's I'm just gonna read it to you if that's alright. It's called Throwing. Square or gold or old, fine art. Spirals which wind round like the jewels or coloured stones found only in a trend. Antiques are the best of all. In our mahogany halls with a chance to fall, I used to find small spots in them. Check right, check left, always behind. Your best friend in times of good air, when not on top you do despair. Do not be false or hide or lie, you are the fair and stoke them all. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. And next up to the microphone we have Mr. Kyle Barrascaro.
Now I just have to tell you these aren't quite as lighthearted as some of the poems. They're a little bit dark, but in my effort to come across more, you know, passionate, I decided to put a bit of colour in my outfit. I also gave this one a ceiling title, but if I know what it means, mimics the mood of the poem. This is called Christmas Leftovers. Toils through testing times, teeth ground down to dust, white knuckles, beads roll off the nose, cascade into a pool and ripple. Bad vibrations crush the will and spirit, scratch my skin off, inconsolable agony like healing, inaudible screams pierce the drum and rattle the bones. Shackles tear the flesh, blood on metal, in a cage, in a coffin, no release. No strength. Lucidity is overrated. Welcome the enemy. Kept close to them as a friend and only friend. Resistance in vain. Feeling fading. A lack of colour. Prison split white to white in a black hole. This one is simply called Insomnia at 4 a.m. and there is no prizes for getting what it's about or when it was written. This place is a prison. Of parted walls and bars, the only confinement is the grip of his dark claws which pierce the skin. Sensations remind me that I still breathe, yet it's not obvious. A cruel limbo where both sun and moon reside, together, alternating no more, wearing only heavy black bags. My eyes are wounds, bleeding, relentless unease, like a bastard infant junkie. His comfort unknown to me. No warm bosom or blanket, only darkness. Too bright to consume me, I stare. Stars stare back, millions of eyes, awake, shining incandescently, casting light in vain, trying to ease a pain they will never know. My tormentor stands tall, a dark figure in a shadowed corner, audaciously grimacing, content with his stranglehold. His solace found, mine still painfully elusive. The melodies I hear have become the soundtrack of my torment. The release of sleep now only a dream, though not dreamt, or rather fancies in my surreal reality. My eyes always open. Time is still, yet hours race by and return to me with a smug arrogance. Agonizing, almost teasing, I am not awake, yet I can never sleep. There is no peace. Thank you very much.